Hey everyone, this episode is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download of your choice and get a free month subscription to Audible by going to audibletrial.com/missspots. Choose from over 180,000 titles, including Chris Jericho's latest book, The Best in the World, At What? I Have No Idea, and Dusty, Reflections of Wrestling's American Dream. Hey, maybe you want something else. I got one of Nick Offerman's audiobooks, and he narrates it himself. It's hilarious. It's great. It's entertaining. Get any audiobook available that you'd like for absolutely no cost. It's free. Go claim your audiobook for free today at audibletrial.com/missspots. Now, enjoy the show.
Time to play the game!
Welcome back to the Missed Spots podcast, the pro wrestling podcast from the perspective of two lifelong fans that simply don't have enough wrestling already going on in their lives. So we decide to talk about it on the internet through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music, and Geek Life Radio. My name is Mike, and with me as always is the Slater to my Gator. Here's Kevin.
I just want to mention that I do this podcast to feed my five wonderful children. Yeah, my six kids, they need the money that comes from this podcast. So because I have seven children, we do this podcast.
Where are your eight children going this weekend with you?
At the cheapest place possible because we make no money off this podcast.
But apparently you make enough money to put them all in the front row of SmackDown last night.
All nine of my children.
All right. So we are getting set for the first SmackDown specific pay-per-view coming up. I don't even know if they call them pay-per-views
anymore. Special event.
Special events coming up this Sunday on the WWE Network, Backlash. And we have still Raw going on, of course, and we'll talk about that because actually some things have happened since we last aired a episode, and it's something very interesting, and we'll talk a bit about that in just, well, actually now, because we're going to go into Raw.
Yeah, so then the week that we were off, we had Kevin Owens win the world title with the help of Triple
Universal
H.
Universal title.
I'm sorry, the Universal Championship. I hate saying that. With the help of Triple H, which was thrilling and amazing and really perplexing and, for me, very annoying because I am so sick and tired of authority figures being the focal point of everything. And this Raw, after this really amazing thing and this really groundbreaking end to the Raw the week before, opens up with authority figures talking. And it's a pre-recorded segment with Mick, very, very upset with Stephanie, and he doesn't understand if he can believe her if she wasn't involved and in the outcome or what happened with Triple H, and she says she wasn't, and Mick says that she was this girl with a shy smile like 12 times, and it was really overdone, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they were going for something a little bit different, and to me, they just kind of beat the horse into the ground, and Stephanie said that, you know, she was embarrassed that her husband did that to her, and that's why she wasn't getting back to Mick. And, okay, so that was the start of the show. And then we started the actual show with the authority figures in the ring. We got a double authority open for that Raw, and it's with Mick and Steph now in front of the live crowd inviting and welcoming Kevin Owens for his celebration of opening Raw for the first time as the Universal Champion, which, as he mentioned, he is now the longest reigning Universal Champion of all time because he's reigned
seven days.
Owens comes out wearing a suit. He looks very uncomfortable, which I don't know. Did you also agree with that statement?
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I thought he looked very, very awkward and uncomfortable in the suit, which is to be expected for a guy who wears basketball shorts and a t-shirt all the time. I really love seeing Owens with the belt, and I am 100% honest when I'm saying the way that they got the title on him to me is awful. why Triple H is even a part of this, why we're still going back and forth with the authority figures that can trust each other or not. This is so played out. I'm done with it. I'm tired with it. Please, for the love of God, stop. The authority figures should not be the focal point of the show. It should be Kevin Owens. It should be Seth Rollins. It should be these guys. And that being said, still good to see Owens with the belt. And Owens gets some good cheers from the crowd and the "you deserve it" chant and all this. And Owens just cuts it off at the knees.
Yeah.
He says
that he's so good at this.
He says, "You're idiots for saying you deserve it. Of course I deserve it. You're trying to make this about you. And this is about me. I'm the champion. I don't need any of you people. I always deserved it." Kevin Owens, one of the best heels in the business, because he's not being a cool heel. He's not relishing in the adoration of the crowd. He gets that crowd against him completely. And it was logical. It made perfect sense, saying to the crowd that, "Why are you making this about you? This is about me." And I just loved every bit of this.
Oh, yeah. We've talked at length about this in the past. He knows how to play a crowd perfectly. When things don't go the way that he necessarily wants them to, he knows how to turn them into going his way. Like, he's a heel. He wants to get booed. They're not booing him. They're cheering him. I'll make them boo me, because I will do whatever it takes to make them turn against me. And he's the master of that.
Just wonderful. He's so wonderful. And Seth Rollins ends up interrupting the celebration, coming out with purpose, intensity in his eyes. Seth Rollins got a decent pop from the crowd, mm-hmm. gets in the ring, and just unleashes a passionate promo on Stephanie and all the fact that he was backed by them and he carried the company and this is how he's repaid and she must have been involved in it. She's always involved in it. And, you know, tells Kevin Owens to shut up, gets big cheers for it. We're getting Seth Rollins as an intense babyface here, essentially, mm-hmm. not officially, but essentially in this confrontation, and doing some very passionate, aggressive mic work. And I thought that was really refreshing. And listen, we've been clamoring for Rollins as a babyface for a long time now. Do you think it's what we're getting, or are we getting a heel versus heel dynamic?
I think this might be the start of something. You are seeing the former golden child of the authority now pretty much on the outs with them. And I think that the frustration of this will turn into, like, what he said. You know what? I'm going to take your new era and I'm going to burn it to the ground.
Which was a great line. And we end up getting a confrontation where Seth attacks KO, Stephanie suspends him indefinitely. And then Mick goes, no, he's not suspended indefinitely. I'm giving him a title match at Clash of Champions.
But I like his reasoning for this. He goes, you know, it's perfectly understandable for a guy who went through what Seth went through yep. last week to be frustrated and want to blow off some steam. Giving some reason, giving some credence, to what Seth is doing. And I think, going back real quick to saying as a babyface turn, maybe this might be a bit of an anti-hero thing, because it could be along the lines of Austin, who isn't just a white meat babyface, but he's one who's going to get in people's hair and mess with them in order to get what he wants. And maybe that's what Seth is going to start doing.
Well, listen, I thought that this entire segment was logical. Unapologetically, I hate the authority figures being such a prominent role, but Mick Foley made all of this work with saying, listen, this is what's best for business. This is what's best for the company and the pay-per-view, and Seth Rollins is owed this, and he makes the match. And I thought this was rather short and to the point. This was compact. This was good, passionate work on both sides with Kevin Owens and with Rollins. Kevin Owens was with great facial expressions the entire time. Just, this was a great confrontation. And if you're going to open up with a talking segment, this was a good way to do it.
I agree.
And it's mm-hmm. cheers for them for doing that. Afterwards, we end up seeing Steph chewing out Mick Foley for usurping her power. And this confrontation, which I'm just not interested in seeing, go back and forth. But Owens comes in. He's pissed as well. But then Steph backs up Mick. Mick said that he'd have Stephanie's back 100% of the way. Stephanie backs Mick up. Jericho comes in, also angry because his best friend is being wronged, which I think mm-hmm. these guys...
yeah.
Owens and Jericho are just dynamite together. I don't know how it happened or where that charisma came from, but these two guys, even having my best friend Kevin Owens. So Mick makes matches for both of them later tonight.
I don't know whether it is supposed to be delusional, the two of them, if they're kind of mocking each other and not really seeing it back and forth between one another, or if they are supposed to legitimately like one another. I don't care, but yeah.
It works either way, but Mick makes matches for them both for later on in the evening. Owens against Zayn and Seth Rollins against Chris Jericho, and Steph totally backs him up and talks trash to the heels. So interesting, maybe. I'm not sure. I still think there's a little too much of the authority stuff, but I'll move on. We get Charlotte versus Bayley.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just say this. Why? Charlotte versus Bayley is the main event, is a main event caliber match down the road for a SummerSlam, for a WrestleMania, for a Survivor Series. It's a big time program versus these two that we know they've already put on an NXT and they can definitely put on the main roster. Why are we doing this match on Raw?
I'm for no wondering reason,
for nothing.
Now, I'm wondering if potentially they're rushing this because of the vocal fans. Because the vocal fans feel like they want to see their favorites in the title picture immediately.
But she's not in the title picture right now.
Well, as we found out later on, she's not. But
I know, yeah.
She kind of is, but kind of isn't at the same time.
Right.
We thought that the result of this match was possibly going to lead to her being announced as the number one contender and going to get a title shot at Clash of Champions. But instead, because of what we saw later on in the evening, we just saw the champion lose to Bayley.
And Bayley has not gotten any introduction vignettes. I'm so tired of them not. They didn't do this for Sami Zayn. They did not do this for Kevin Owens. They didn't do it for so many of the people that they've brought up. And Bayley is a very specific kind of character, and she's getting good reactions. That's true. But she could be getting white hot reactions 2-3 months from now if they treated her with the respect of giving, tell the fans the backstory. Is she just some woman that shows up with a weird looking ponytail off the top of her head and is smiling all the time? No, tell her the story of how she came to be the champion in NXT. And came to be the water bearer of that division. But they don't. They do none of that. They just count on the fans being okay with it, and they count on the very more serious fans to inform their friends, inform the casual fans. I just think this is always a mistake, and they have all this footage. They have pre-made that they can plug in here. And I just think that they're dropping the ball with this, and I get very frustrated with it. We do get this match. Bayley got a good pop. Charlotte looks amazing. I was so impressed with Charlotte during this entire match. Yeah. There's so many things I can point out, but Charlotte was vicious. She was attacking a body part. She was methodically working. She was not rushing through her spots. She was taking her time. This to me is showing the polish that's coming on her character and on her ring work, because she's not looking like she needs to move from spot to spot as quickly as possible. When she was first called up, so much of her work was this quick counter offense. Now she's learning how to work a body part. She's learning how to methodically take a baby face down and then build so that baby face can make a comeback. And I was so happy to see that the whole way. Dana's outside of the ring taking notes, because Charlotte's trying to show her what it takes to take down Bayley. Bayley showed great fight, great fire as a baby face making a comeback, and through some shenanigan nonsense near the end where Charlotte kind of hits Dana, we end up getting a Bayley to belly and a clean W for Bayley.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not a fan of this.
That was a giveaway. Yeah. Like on live, on cable television, there's, like you said, a future main event match that they just gave away.
They were telling this story of the dominant, brutal champion beating down a smaller opponent. We know that they had the plans to have the Sasha versus Charlotte rematch at Clash of Champions. right? So we need to show that Charlotte is the dominant force and is a methodically work a body part. She's going to work Sasha Banks' back, most likely, which is perfect for the storytelling aspect of it. Bayley shows great fire and resilience, and she won't quit, and she keeps coming back. The story they were telling was perfect. Bayley is not hurt at all by losing there. Not in one way, shape, or form. She is not hurt by losing there. But they don't let that story play out. They just go for whatever they were going for to give the Bayley the win over the champion. And then they do this way too often. Just way too often.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little fluky because of the interference of Dana Brooke, but it wasn't. It was a Bayley to Bayley and a clean pin.
Yeah.
So there was so much good about this and so much, in my opinion, just misguided.
Yeah.
Misguided about it. In the back, Charlotte is pissed at Dana and gives her one of the hardest slaps I think I've ever seen on television across the face, saying that she basically screwed her up and it's Dana's fault that she lost a championship match, or not a championship match, but she lost to Bayley. The next thing we get on our screen made me smile ear to ear.
I bet it did.
I just wrote here, Bo! Bo! It's Bo! Many, many exclamation points. Bo gets a match against a job guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is almost a Strowman kind of thing, right?
We've
only seen those squash matches.
I was a little concerned, being that like he had this drunken, disorderly thing, I guess a week or so ago, that they might use this to have a jobber beat Bo and make him look like a fool.
He's got some new gear. He comes out with a new sign.
It wasn't new gear. What's it called? Gear.
Social Outcast gear?
Yeah, because it said Outcast.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I forgot all about it because he's been so underused.
Yeah.
He's got a new sign. He comes out not as happy, not as smiley, cuts an intense short promo, and just aggressively attacks I have him listed as some guy. We get a quick match. He uses the Crossroads, I believe with Cody Rhodes,
mm-hmm.
a finisher that he used to use. And he takes a little walking lap around the ring, little smile, but much more serious, much more aggressive. I love delusional heel Bo Dallas, and there were so many possibilities for it. But if they're going to give him some time and develop his character, I am 100% for this. I thought this was wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely.
We get a fun little backstage segment with KO and Y2J. Once again, these guys are amazing. Right before, we get Rollins and Chris Jericho in a match. Rollins was very intense in the beginning of the match, all the way through, kind of working a different style in a lot of ways, as a more aggressive, intense, maybe babyface, maybe tweener, we're not really sure yet. It was a pretty good match. I really like the finish encounter that Rollins had into
the
pedigree.
That was quite nice.
Kind of played to the crowd a little bit, which we don't see as a heel.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll have to change that finisher at some point, or maybe it'll be a pedigree versus pedigree against Triple H at WrestleMania. But this was a fine match. It was nothing wrong with it. Little paint by numbers. We didn't think that Jericho's going to go over Rollins, but they did a good job in there.
Yeah. I was interested to see what he used as his finisher in this match. Was he going to be frustrated with Triple H and change it up? Or was he going to be like, no,
this is mine now.
Yeah. I'm still not thrilled with it, even though I did say however long ago when he was going through this transition from the curb stomp that like maybe he should just take the pedigree as his next step towards being Triple H's guy. And I mean, they went with that, but I think that as that goes away, is Triple H really going to pass the torch of that finishing move? I mean, you got to see on SummerSlam his old indie finisher, the God's Laugh Skift or the small package driver. And that's a devastating move. It's a little dangerous, but I'd like to see that used more often. But because of its danger,
he also has a Phoenix Splash that he could use. Mm-hmm. So he's got a lot of things in his arsenal that could be a finisher, and we'll see. But I thought this was fine. This is where Jericho should be at
yeah.
on the card at this point. Our next segment was Cesaro versus Sheamus in match three of their best of seven series. Cesaro's down 2-0. And the story that we told from the previous encounter was that Cesaro had a seriously injured back. He's got his kinesio tape all over it. Bullshit. But he still has it on there. It's got a good look to it. At least it has some relevance in the storytelling way. I like that. I like the story all the way. I like that Cesaro's down 2-0. I like that he's the underdog because of an injury. And I like that they gave him a little bit of that kind of in-ring, in-box, backstage segment to talk about this. We now have a reason for them to be fighting because one of them's going to get a championship opportunity down the road. You know, Cesaro's in there selling like Ricky Morton. And Sheamus is the big bag bruiser, attacking a body part, taking advantage.
All the backbreakers that he did.
And some of them were brutal looking. This was really, really well done. Sheamus hits a brogue kick, and we get him up 3-0 on Cesaro. I know a lot of the people aren't into this. They think that Sheamus is boring. They don't like a best of seven. I am all about this. Cesaro is going to muscle up, come back, and I think win this thing. And I think he'll be better for it. I think what we'll remember is the last couple matches in this series, and people won't remember the first couple. And I think both Sheamus and Cesaro will be better off after this entire thing is completed.
Also, because I don't think that it would be counting as spoilers, because this is a live show in London, which is where their fourth match was going on today, Cesaro wins. So this begins the road of the comeback.
But do you like this? Are you a fan?
I really do. I think that this will get people behind Cesaro more.
This is a slow build. Trust us, crowd. If you're not into this, you will be. I think they're doing a good job with it.
Mm-hmm.
Primo and Epico are in the ring. The shining stars who we don't see very often, at least on actual Raw, we see vignettes all the time. We get Enzo and Cass interrupting Primo and Epico. Enzo says stuff and then does stuff that I find pretty dumb, including Enzo pantomiming giving birth.
Yeah,
that was dumb. That was really dumb. Sorry.
There was this weird moment with Cass as well, because he goes, "You know, Cass, I can think of one word to describe them." And I like, that's where you're supposed to do your whole thing. He's like, so, shining stars, there's only one word. Like, you just said there was one word to this. Now you're repeating. They were right there. They could hear you. You have a microphone.
I mean, I don't know if that was just the way it was scripted. This was stupid. This was really, really dumb. No thank you to that, but still yay to Enzo and Big Cass. We get a tag match between the two. I really like the Shining Stars offense. I think it's crisp. These guys are good in-ring workers. They've got a lot going for them, and it looks like we're actually going to get a feud between these two tag teams. I'm really excited about it. Byron at some point says that this was the first time that we've seen someone give birth on Raw, referring to Enzo's thing. And Corey correctly mentions Mae Young. Corey Graves is just the best. He continues to impress. He's sharp as a whip.
His head is full of so much good stuff.
You can tell he's a fan. Yeah. You can tell he's passionate. He's just the best. I love Corey Graves. And he's getting better and better each week as he gets more and more comfortable with the programming. The Stars win with a roll-up, holding the tights. I don't have a problem with this. A lot of people are really upset that you had, like, derailing Enzo and Big Cass. They got a cheap win. Enzo and Big Cass are way over, and this might lead to a program between the two, which is good.
Having another tag team program going on.
That's not a world title. Yeah.
I was all for this. It's going to take a lot more than one roll-up loss to derail the monster that is Enzo and Cass.
I am not a huge fan. I can't stand when 75% of matches on Raw win with a roll-up. This was one that worked.
Yeah.
Right? So they can work. You can't do them if you do them in the right spot.
If it can help build up the Shining Stars as credible heels, then that's even more power.
That's what it's there for. We get Sami Zayn backstage, and I think this was the most meta on-the-nose promo that you can ever hear, as he's calling himself directionless and saying that he thought after beating Kevin Owens he was going to just skyrocket to bigger things, but he hasn't had anything really to do I mean, was that like truth in advertising right there? Was that just the WWE's creative staff just writing out their thoughts in their mind that they had nothing for him, so they might as well have Sammy say it? KO interrupts him, rubs the title in his face. Listen, I love seeing these two guys interact, but to me, this feels like a retread right now. They just
it's
had
so
their,
close.
They
to,
just had their yeah. big blow off. The current blow off. We know they'll interact down the road. They just had this blow off so recently, and to have them back in each other's faces, and there's nothing really on the line for Sammy. I don't know. I wasn't a huge fan of it.
No. Yeah.
And also just admitting that they have nothing for Sami Zayn is also a little embarrassing.
Yeah, it's almost like a rib at him.
They should have had something for him. They mm-hmm. didn't. That was their fault, not his.
Mm-hmm.
We get Nia Jax versus a person. And apparently this person is Alicia Fox's friend.
Yes.
And she destroys Alicia Fox's friend. Cool. I'm still fine with the squash matches, by the way. But just like with Braun Strowman, as we saw later on, it's time for Nia Jax to compete against Alicia Fox, which it looks like they're going in that direction, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
The next segment, I didn't watch this. I watched this on DVR. I watched Raw on DVR, and I refuse to watch this segment, mostly because I'm embarrassed for what they've done with Anderson and Gallows, and I'm getting kind of tired of the New Day. The New Day were supposed to get a little more serious, possibly, after the Wyatt feud. They haven't. They weren't changed. They just go right back to their old shtick because either they're too scared to have character development with these guys, or they don't have anything for them to do. Anderson and Gallows are badasses who dominated New Japan, who work an aggressive in-ring style. Coming off of the Wyatt feud, the New Day could have been there with aggressive guys going after their titles like pit bulls, and the New Day has to respond by manning up and being serious competitors. Instead, we get these nonsense segments over and over again with bad comedy, poorly written, that no one cares for. Done.
There's so much that I could say about this, and it's hard for me to put it all together into a coherent statement. I saw many people say on Twitter, you know, Anderson and Gallows are really funny on their podcast, but they don't need this. This isn't what their characters are supposed to be. This was one joke that has now been drawn out. Like, I was okay, and you were too, with that one segment
that was
about the ring postitis.
And then they just drove it in the ground.
Yeah. Now they've been like, hey, we got laughs off of that. This has McMahon written all over it.
Absolutely.
This is his shtick to where, oh, now we got to pound this joke into the fucking ground. These two were the most dominant tag team in New Japan at the time. They left pretty good paying gig on the top of the card over there to come over to WWE. Yeah, they're back in their own home country. They don't have to travel as far away from their families. But for this is what Anderson and Gallows are in WWE for?
Five guys in this feud with incredible talent, charisma, good in-ring workers, and we're getting idiotic garbage. I'm sorry. No, thank you. I don't care for this at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's embarrassing. I this is the kind of stuff that I ask my wife to walk out of the room. Please don't judge me. This is so poorly done. Moving on, we get Darren Young versus Jinder Mahal. And man, they've done absolutely nothing with Darren Young. I know this Titus thing has just been repetitive and poorly booked. And it just seems like it's just monotonous. It's just part of it's the wallpaper at this point. There's nothing behind this feud, and it's been so poorly done that any interest has evaporated long ago. The best part about this entire match was Corey Graves trying to start a fight between Byron and Titus O'Neil on commentary. Once again, thank you, Corey Graves. You made a very poor segment at least a little bit more bearable. Darren wins with
Gut check.
Gut checks, thank you. After Titus comes down to ringside, then Darren jumps Titus, and we get a pull apart that's kind of weak. And
although Darren did take off Titus's shoe and throw it at him,
I saw that. Yes, that was maybe the second most interesting thing done. But do you have any care for this story at this point? They could have done okay with this, right?
Could have.
But it's just repetitive. It's the same thing every single week. I mean, God.
They also could have decided not to name an award after the Ultimate Warrior.
That's a very good point. After this, we go to the back and we see Alicia Fox. We see Alicia Fox leaving the trainer's room, apparently checking on her friend. Nia Jax says words about how this is what happens when you go up against me. And Alicia Fox loses her mind and has a hissy fit. Not this again. This was not entertaining at all when she was pouring popcorn and soda on herself and stealing JBL's hat. But now her response to Nia getting in her face is to, for one, throw something and smash her in the face in a pretty aggressive manner.
And then she immediately was like, oh my God, I'm sorry.
Right.
And Nia just smashed her into the wall.
But Nia's response to getting smacked in the face hard with something is just to kind of push her. I would have expected her to devour her right there. But then she just starts freaking out and throwing things. No, no, no. Garbage all the way. That's just terrible. Why is Alicia Fox acting like this?
Okay. When this happened, I was like, are you telling me that they just did this live instead of having this been taped and then put, like, when that first happened, okay, let's do this again, and then putting the real one. It's almost, or this is the whole Gene Okerlund with the SummerSlam sign that they played the wrong the wrong take, because there's no reason that should have been a live take of anything in the back like that. They should have had that in the can hours ago. But her reaction was so hilarious to me. I'm sorry that I enjoyed this as much as I did, but sometimes little botches like this bring me joy.
I'm not looking forward to seeing Alicia Fox pour Coke on her head again. So,
No.
We get Strowman versus an actual member of the roster in Sin Cara. This I'm happy about. We're moving into members of the actual roster. And the story even makes sense. Zin Cara is saying that the week previous, Braun pulled off the match of a luchador, and Zin Cara is defending the Lucha Libre style against Braun Strowman. I thought that was great, and it makes sense. I liked Corey Graves saying during this match, it's like having a brick wall running at you. When Strowman hit Zin Cara, I thought that was good. The only thing about this match that didn't make sense, and as happy as I am that Strowman's moving on to dominating people we actually know, is Strowman won via countout somehow. Mm-hmm. Because Sin Cara actually made it back into the ring.
Yeah.
Then was pulled out, but the ref was on like 8.
Yeah, that should have reset the count.
Absolutely, it should have. Mm-hmm. But somehow, I mean, maybe that was just a mistake, or oftentimes I'm convinced that the WWE writing staff doesn't even know the rules of wrestling, so maybe they just didn't realize it. Then Strowman throws Sin Cara around a little bit. I mean, this was an extended squash, and then Strowman won with the countout, which he didn't really, and then he got in the ring and he pointed at his brain like, hey, I'm smart. I get the countout. And I just mentioned this big, Braun smart. That's all I could think was going on in the guy's head, which is probably unfair. I'm sure he's a bright guy, but just the character itself. Thought that was a little interesting. Sasha Banks comes out in street gear, and we were getting teases all night that she had some bad news announcement. Is she retiring? Is she going to be out for an extended period? We knew she had some back issues. We knew she had some lingering issues, which is one of the reasons why she dropped the title to Charlotte. So we know this as being, you know, a little more intense fans, but this is what they were teasing all night. Did you think she was actually injured? You knew this was a work the whole time?
I thought that we might have gotten something, to where she said she'll be out for a period of time, but I in no way thought that she was going to announce her retirement.
Yeah. You know, she struggled a bit early on. She stumbled over her words, and there were a couple times during this promo where it looked like she was actively trying to remember the script. I don't know if you felt that way, but it just, it might have just been that she was playing off the emotion of the situation.
Yeah, that's what I gathered.
But in the very beginning, she kind of stumbled over her words and had to kind of walk back around. This just means to me, if that was the problem, they need to stop scripting them so heavily and let them speak from the heart. Because I think Sasha is fine at doing that. I think she did a great job at NXT on the mic, but she doesn't seem as comfortable, since she's been called up the main roster from what I see. She talked a lot about women's wrestling and, opposed to divas and insult the big butterfly belt, which
she called it the stupid butterfly title.
Right. Yeah. Which I loved. I thought that was great. And, she did seem genuine. She didn't care, and there was real emotion in her voice. And, then she said she has to break some bad news, and Dana comes out. And she interrupts and says that she's gonna finish off what Charlotte started. Really quick bank statement. Sasha grabs the mic and said, the bad news was for Charlotte. I'm facing her at Clash of Champions, and I'm taking my title back.
Mm.
Well done.
Yeah.
For the most part, well done.
Sure. And then that was the point where I'm like, why did they have Bailey beat her?
It doesn't seem logical to me. Sorry. I might be wrong. The main event of the evening, we get KO versus Sami Zayn. Listen, there's nothing wrong with this match at all. This was perfectly well done. It just wasn't their best match, in my opinion. The crowd wasn't all that into it for whatever reason. Sammy was selling at one point. He had kind of hurt his ankle or tweaked it, kayfabe, on the episode before that. And he kind of was selling that ankle, which kind of led to him not being able to deliver the Huluva kick and Kevin Owens getting a regular powerbomb, not a pop-up powerbomb. We might be seeing that more often from him for the victory. So Kevin Owens goes over clean.
Yeah, and then, you know, at the beginning of this match and through most of this match, Twitter really started to erupt with, like, oh, my God, know who we haven't seen this entire episode? Roman Reigns. We're not going to get him on this episode. Yay, everybody. Oh, yeah. Then,
and he came out to some pretty heavy boos. I kind of had forgotten about him. I wasn't thinking that we hadn't seen Roman, and I didn't really care. I wasn't interested to see him. He's not a character that, to me, is very interesting. And I'm also starting to feel bad for Kevin Owens, because Owens has everybody gunning for him. He seems a little bit like the underdog at this point, with Rollins going after him, and now Roman having some legitimate beef, by the way, he does. After Owens kind of steps out, Roman's in the ring trying to look for a face-off. Chris Jericho comes down, and now we've got both the guys standing on either side of the ring. Now Mick Foley comes out, and Mick makes a match for the following week. If Roman can beat Kevin Owens next week on Raw, he gets added to the match at Clash of Champions, and it'll be Roman versus Seth versus KO. After that, we get a spear to Chris Jericho, and the crowd apparently goes home happy, if you consider the crowd happy to see that. I do not. I loved Mick making the match with a one-on-one KO and Seth Rollins for Clash of Champions. I am much less interested in a triple threat with Roman Reigns inserted.
Yeah. I'm really hoping that this turns into the defining point that Kevin is a legit champion. You let him beat Roman, make it the one-on-one match, and just run with that. Then give Roman whatever the fuck else. I mean, maybe Rusev will be back from his honeymoon next week.
Yeah, we haven't seen Rusev.
He's apparently on his honeymoon.
But still, yeah. No, they didn't say anything about it. He's a U.S. champ.
Yeah, at least when Miz was away, they did something to keep Miz relevant.
And they're supposed to still be in a feud with Roman and Rusev, and they haven't mentioned that because they had to put him in the main event picture, which was dropping a storyline, which I hate, just to have him out there because he needs to be the face of the company. Roman Reigns is a fine in-ring worker with all the potential in the world. His character is as stale as any character on the entire roster at this point. No one cares about it. His music is stale. His ring attire is stale. His character up and down is stale. No one gives a shit.
He's like Rick DiPietro.
I don't know. Get that.
Former goalie of the New York Islanders. He was a number one pick. He was signed to a big contract. They expected so much from him. He had one good year and he never lived up to his potential. Maybe even Darko Milicic. He's probably not as bad as Darko.
I think that Roman Reigns has all the talent to be a top star. I think that they have done him no favors, and it's time to reinvent Roman Reigns a little bit because this was not exciting to me.
No.
So that was Raw.
So Tuesday we had the Blue Brand coming to us straight from the Cornhusker State, Lincoln, Nebraska, and boy was this crowd bad. It didn't seem like they cared about anything. It was almost as if like the local radio station gave away all of the tickets to this to the first 30,000 callers, and because people in Lincoln, Nebraska, still listen to the old radio. The show starts off in traditional, it's coming to look like SmackDown fashion, with Daniel Bryan in the ring. And
authority figures.
Yeah.
Authority figures, authority figures, authority figures.
And he is out there to talk up the first ever women's six-pack elimination challenge at Backlash to crown a SmackDown women's champion. And he says that he's going to bring out some of the women to, or bring out the women to have a women's forum. He brings out Becky Lynch first, and Becky, I don't think Becky, I don't know if she's just not good, as good on the mic, or if this is the way that they're scripting her to be. She comes across so, oh golly gee, shucks, thanks for noticing me, folks, I really love ya, when she's out there, and it's just kind of lame to see. She's interrupted by Natalia. Natty comes out, and you know how Natty can be on the mic. She says that the draft was the single worst night of her career. I would have thought that that was when she accepted the farting gimmick.
That had to have been much worse.
Yeah. She makes fun of Becky's cheap, unnatural hair color. And she gets into the ring, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Alexa Bliss comes into the ring. No music or anything. And she calls Daniel Bryan a Bella Trophy husband. Nice little line there from her. And then all of a sudden, Carmella's in the ring. Again, no entrance music. She just came out. And then she cut her promo, which I just thought was weird. My name is Carmella. Like, yes, we all know your name by now. You're in the ring with everyone else who all knows your name. No introductions needed. She talks about how she beat up Nikki Bella, and then Nikki Bella comes into the ring with no introduction, no music whatsoever. Eventually, all the ladies are in the ring. This leads to a brawl between all of the ladies. It just seemed so, I don't know. They rushed everyone out there. I know they only have 2 hours, but they rushed everyone out there, said a couple words, were interrupted, and was like, okay, let's all fight now. And of course we get that there's going to be a six woman tag later on in the show. Teddy Long didn't need to get the GM or commissioner position of SmackDown Live. He lives on in spirit in that show.
I just feel like we've done this so many times on SmackDown since they've done the brand split. They just do these big, everyone is in the ring for a long talking segment with the authority figures involved. It's great that they're giving the time to the women here. And Becky is the best out there. Yes, she has Charlotte disease right now, which is how Charlotte was booked when she first came out to the main roster. Mm. Way too white meat baby face, way too vanilla, way too obvious with her character. But there's talent in this ring, but there's also, we don't know anything about Carmella. We don't know anything about Alexa Bliss. We haven't even seen Natty on TV consistently enough to know much about it, other than the fact that she's more aggressive now. There's just not enough character here, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there.
Well, the same thing goes for Naomi, who ended up coming out. Mm-hmm. That now she's has body glowing.
Her hair and her gear glow in the dark.
But why? There's just no character here. And that's why it's suffering, because no one knows what knows who these people are or what their goals are or what who they are.
The first of a few dumb Dean Ambrose promos or segments, we have Dean at catering and he steals someone's coffee, pours a shit ton of sugar into it, tastes it, doesn't like it, and hands it back to the guy and says, "You're welcome."
Sure.
Yeah. Goofy old Dean, you know. And then Brian and Shane are in the back discussing the opening segment when Miz comes in with Maryse and says that they need to stop worrying about the women's title and care more about the Intercontinental title. He complained about having to defend the title against a loser like Dolph Ziggler at Backlash. And Miz said that Brian is doing this to spite me. And Brian just said, you were challenged by Ziggler and you backed down from him last week. So don't worry. You can't back down from him at, Backlash. If you don't want to, you can hand over your title right now. And, begrudgingly, Miz walks away and he gets to the ring because he is going to take on Apollo Crews, who he just fought at SummerSlam. Dolph Ziggler is on commentary, and him and David Otunga have way too many interactions with one another that are very cringeworthy. And
isn't everything with David Otunga?
Yes. And you know, Dolph by himself is pretty good, but when he starts interacting with Otunga, it was just like, oh, why are you patronizing him? Pretty standard match for The Miz and Apollo. I feel really bad that this is what Apollo is doing right now. He was just called up way too early. There's an interaction on the outside with Miz and Apollo. And, of course, we get him pushing Apollo into Dolph. Yes. And then skull crushing finale on the inside. Miz wins. And then, Dolph comes into the ring afterwards to try to chase him off. The belt is left in the ring. Miz sends Maryse in to pick up the belt for him, because he doesn't want to have any interaction with Dolph. End scene.
This was actually a better match than probably the match they had at the pay-per-view, Miz and Apollo Crews. But I don't understand this turnaround for this Miz and Dolph thing, because they had to turn around so fast after the main pay-per-view of SummerSlam. This just feels very rushed and like there's not that much story here. Mm-hmm. The bigger story here is Miz and the interaction he had with Daniel Bryan a couple weeks ago. That's the real story and Miz's character's evolution. We're not seeing enough of it.
Yeah. After this, we have Renee Young at the Talking Smack set with AJ Styles. She shows from last week how Styles got crotched on the top rope by Dean. Styles gets mad that they showed that footage and begins to yell at a stagehand and takes off his headset and says, "Oh, if I smash this, you'd probably get fired." And he pushes the guy away. Okay, are we making AJ into a bully here, or what?
AJ's a heel; he can be a bully.
Okay. And after this, we get the Usos out doing their whole chant, Usos were in the back, talking with Charlie Caruso, I guess that's her name, and talking up that they're going to face American Alpha later on, and they just. They said things and stuff.
Well, they were basically saying they were like the, they're still the standard bearer, right, of the tag team mm-hmm. division, and they still have to go through them, which we haven't seen the Usos as the standard bearers for the tag team division in a long time, because they're another very kind of dry, directionless act.
Yeah. Bray Wyatt hanging out in a smoky room. You would have expected the camera to rotate over to Topher Grace and then Ashton Kutcher and Wilmer Valderrama, that they were all in the basement of that 70s show. So this means that we just got a Bray Wyatt promo. It was long, it was rambling, and it didn't really go many places.
Well, they rarely do.
Moving on, we had the six women tag team match. We got a pretty decent match where everyone got a chance to showcase their skills a little bit. I think that Carmella was given a little bit extra time to shine and kind of hide her faults there for a bit. Of course, she did get the finish. She made Nikki tap out to the Code of Silence. And does that set up? Is that a false flag to make us think that Carmella might be the threat there?
Well, conventional booking says the person that goes over on the go-home show doesn't go over. Maybe blah, 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 blah. Who knows? I can't see them putting a title on Carmella or Alexa Bliss. I don't think they're finished products yet. I don't think they're someone that's comfortable with talking segments. Are very comfortable with talking segments, I should say. Both of them have done some decent work in NXT. I think they're probably going to go in a different direction, but it's nice that they feature one of the newer arrivals because they need a lot more. They need a lot more love and care. They need more attention. We don't know anything about them yet, so it's hard to really understand what their characters are.
Mm-hmm. Then we got the first match in the semifinals of the tag team tournament, and we got the Usos against American Alpha. The teams shake hands and head to their respective corners. When the bell rings, the Usos turn right around and go right at attacking American Alpha. Very heelish tactic there, but AA quickly recovers and hits the Grand Amplitude to win in about 30 seconds, shocking to a lot of people. This then led to the Usos offering up a handshake once again, but this time super kicking Jordan and singling out Chad Gable, taking out his knee with kind of a stomp to the knee, and then the splash off the top rope to it as ringside doctors came down to tend to Gable. So possible injury angle that they were going on there. Were you surprised that they full on turned the Usos, or they've teased it a tiny bit?
It was about time. The Usos are a very stale product right now, similar to their, I guess, in-story cousin. I'm not sure if they're actually really cousins, but very similar. They've needed a character refresh for a long time. I think this is a good time to pull the trigger on it. No one's really cared about them in a while. So I'm glad to see it. I think it's interesting. And I'm surprised that they did it at this point. I'm surprised they got Gable and Jordan out of the tag tournament because I thought that they were a shoo-in to win it. But we'll see. It's an interesting turn of events.
We have a backstage segment with Randy Orton, who he's approached by Charlie Caruso, and he decides to give his own little nursery story, not nursery rhyme because it didn't rhyme, but his own little story that makes me think that he's probably terrible at bedtime stories for his kids, either just doesn't do them or
terrifies them.
Yeah, scares the shit out of them. It was just kind of Randy being like, yeah, you can say whatever you want and it doesn't really faze me.
Randy is a very whatever kind of guy in the first place. I don't see Randy selling fear to Bray Wyatt at all.
Yeah. Fandango is in the ring and he says that Tyler Breeze couldn't be there tonight because he is in Dubai looking for the finest silks for their upcoming fashion line.
Well, that's good.
And then he brings in a random woman who looks like Lita if she just went on a bender for 20-something years and to dance with him. And when she doesn't dance well, he berates her. This, of course, leads to Kane coming out to chokeslam him because, of course, it's Kane.
I just want to know where the hell this is going. We've seen Kane come out a couple times recently and just kind of chokeslam.
I mean, they probably just can't get Pete Rose, so they're like, we need to send Kane out to chokeslam someone.
Okay, sure. Are they just reminding us that Kane's around? I mean, you have to think they're building to something, but maybe they're not. Maybe this is just a thing.
And by the way, Lincoln, Nebraska fucking loves Kane. That's a thing.
Well, maybe he should, maybe, is there a territory around there? Could he just kind of go there and be their big, most over babyface?
AJ Styles is in the back, being kind of paranoid. He walks by two other stagehands. Bad night to be a stagehand. Although also kind of good because you got some TV time with Dean and AJ. He sees them with a phone and he thinks that they took a picture of him. But instead they show, no, we're looking at this guy's family. He's like, oh yeah, you are. And then chucks the phone at the wall and like, don't you know who I am? And walks away. And we get some Kurt Hawkins facts because Kurt Hawkins is coming back next week and they are trying to make him be like the most interesting man in the world. All fake kind of facts except for the one that says Kurt Hawkins tells his GPS where to go. Every single person tells their GPS where to go. Well, the GPS just directs you on how to get there.
But is it still a fact?
Yeah. That's a fact. Double fact. And we get tag team tournament semifinal match number 2, Hype Bros against Heath and Rhino. Very big We Want Ryder chant during this match. Lincoln, you're so funny. But of course the quasi-face team of Rhino and Slater end up getting the win to continue on with this story of if Heath needs to win this entire tournament in order to get a SmackDown Live contract. Prior to the match, we saw that Heath's family, his wife and 7 kids, were front row right behind the announce table. They also mentioned on commentary that Heath was hoping to move up in the world from a single wide to a double wide trailer if he can win the tag team titles. He can't afford a double wide trailer, but he sure can afford 8 front row tickets for his wife and 7 kids.
Maybe he borrowed the money from Rhino.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Well, Rhino's going to be a successful politician.
Right. So he's got money.
He's got the monies coming from the big corporations that pay him off. Right, Rhino? Then at Talking Smack Desk, Renee Young is talking up about the injury that occurred to American Alpha. As we come to find out, American Alpha is no longer in the tournament despite winning their match. And instead, they will be replaced by a kind of a fight-in match where the losers of the 2 semifinal matches, Hype Bros and Usos, will face off at Backlash with the winner going on later in the night to take on Heath and Rhino for the titles. Dean then comes out for his face-to-face with AJ Styles, and Dean tells Charlie Caruso to get out of the ring. Things could get a bit ugly in here, and we have more wacky, crazy Dean, who he calls AJ a soccer mom because of his haircut. He pulls out a bowling participation trophy to give to AJ. But then all of a sudden, when Styles calls, you're not John Cena, Dean goes, damn right I'm not John Cena, and he goes into a really heartfelt, serious promo, the type of Dean that we love to see, and was really starting to go somewhere until AJ pretty much just kicked him in the nuts. And
it's one way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of like that from AJ. It just is kind of like, you know, I've been dealing with a guy who's cutting promos on me for the past 2-3 months. I'm sick of this shtick. Bam. Now tell me how you feel. This whole Dean thing ever since the end of the Dolph feud, as short as that was, has just been back to the zany, wacky Dean wearing hats and drinking people's coffee and smelling hairspray. It's just, I don't like this Dean. I don't like it at all. I love Dean. I love it when he's serious, when he's all about, I fought to get myself to this place. I'm going to fight even harder to keep myself here. But and while I wasn't even thrilled with the whole AJ thing for this night, AJ's really the one right now.
They don't seem to know how to book Dean Ambrose, in my opinion. And we get too much. We never get a consistent, intense, serious Dean Ambrose, a serious world title holder. We get too much of the zany stuff in there, and because of that, this doesn't. I'm not in love with this storyline. I'm not in love with this feud, even though I'm really excited about the match itself.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way I can describe it.
So this leads us all into Backlash this Sunday, the first SmackDown-specific pay-per-view network special, whatever you want to call it, special event. We only have 6 matches planned for a 3-hour show. I'm sure that they'll add something else in there. Maybe Baron versus Kalisto, which was a thing that they were doing, although there was no mention of it in this past week's episode. But let's just hit on the 6 matches that we know of at this point of time. And let's just start with the new semifinal match for the tag team tournament, with the Usos taking on the Hype Bros to get a shot at the titles later on in the night.
It's interesting because I have a hard time defining whether Slater and Rhino are heels or babyfaces, just because they're booked kind of heelish, but you get babyface reactions, and the storyline seems to be a payoff for Slater. So I would probably say the Hype Bros make the more sense because of the fact that they seem like heels, but I think the Usos make more sense of winning this match and fighting Slater and Rhino later on, because I think that the payoff is Slater winning, Slater and Rhino winning. So I'm going to go with the Usos. And they're also a much bigger team than the Hype Bros. It makes more sense, and it'd be more interesting, I think, to have them proceed in the tournament.
Yeah, I'm exactly with you on this, because you could look at it as the American Alpha costing the Usos the semifinal match and having the what we think is the traditional heel face dynamic between Hype Bros and Slater and Rhino, or you can have the Usos win and then have that distraction at the finals. But I think what we're both in agreement with kind of is that the finals is going to lead to satisfaction of Slater and Rhino winning the title, Slater getting the contract with SmackDown Live. Otherwise, it would be a really, really cruel joke.
I agree with that. I think that's where they're going with it. They could end up having the Usos win, keep it, grab the titles, and have American Alpha chase them. But I think it makes more sense to have Rhino and Slater hold those titles, have another tag team feud with the Usos and with American Alpha, and have someone chase Slater and Rhino. I think that would be an interesting way to do it.
Yeah, and I think that with as much that of what Slater has given this company over the years, being the butt of many, many, many jokes, that he deserves a little comeuppance.
For sure.
I mean, even Santino got some title reigns in there every now and then. So why not give a guy who's been a pretty good company man a nice time to shine? Moving on, we got Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt in a match that it just seems super rushed. I mean, we have only had 3 weeks since SummerSlam. Their first interaction was the SmackDown prior to SummerSlam, but it's been pretty much everything that you expect from Bray, his rambling esoteric promos, but Randy's just kind of shrugging the whole thing off, kind of like he did on this episode of SmackDown. It's like, I've been in this game for too long. I haven't seen you do anything that's really scary and really done anything to change anyone. So I'm just going to go into this match and I'm going to have my way with you. And being that Randy is already announced to be having a rematch with Brock Lesnar shortly, it just makes me think that you can't have Randy lose this going into a rematch with Brock. How are you supposed to then build that up as something special? I just think Bray is going to lose here unless they do something swervy with a no finish in there.
Bray's a guy that I thought would work really well with Randy Orton. We've done our who could work together, what guys would play off each other well. I think these guys could work together. This is a rushed feud. I don't think they've put much material into it. If Bray can't scare you as another wrestler, then what else does he have? He doesn't have muscle behind him anymore. Randy's kind of like, whatever, bro. And with him going into another match with Lesnar, yeah, I can't see Randy not winning this match. I could see some kind of wacky, dusty kind of finish, but I guess I gotta go with Randy because there's no real good option here.
I'm with that as well. I hate to see Bray lose again, but it's almost like, John Cena wins, is lol Bray Wyatt loses, for the new internet meme.
Yeah.
6-pack challenge elimination match for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Alexa Bliss, Carmella, Becky Lynch, Natalia, Naomi, and Nikki Bella. There's a lot of N's there at the end. And you would like to think that the idea is probably Becky Lynch. She's the best one over there, or the most over one, at least, there, and a great worker. And maybe this is her time to hold on to a title.
I'm going to go with Becky Lynch because I think she's the most obvious choice. I think Becky or Nikki would be the one to take this. I honestly think that they were trying to build up to having Ava Marie win this because she's so loathed and she would be a terrible option, but almost a perfect option because everyone hates her and she would be a loathed heel champion. Obviously, we had a violation of the wellness policy, and like so many times this year, and recently, we've had a change booking midstream because of all these issues, sometimes because of bad writing, other times because of the acts of the actual in-ring talent and injuries. The younger women, the up-and-comer coming ones, aren't ready for it. It's Nikki or Becky. I think they give Becky a good moment. She's the lead face of that division, in my opinion.
I was back and forth with Becky and Natalya, but I'm going to go with Natty, because Natty has been with the company for quite a while and she hasn't held a belt for a long time. So I think that it would be a nice gesture to give her a short title reign. Plus she already has the story built in with Becky right now that they haven't, let go of. So you could have that go on for a little bit more and maybe have Becky take the title off of Natty at maybe Survivor Series for a bigger moment for her.
Could be.
We got the Intercontinental title on the line with The Miz defending against Dolph Ziggler. A feud that's been kind of thrown together as well. But I think you got to keep the title on The Miz right now. He's shown such great work with his character, a lot of fire. And he has shown a desire to want to hold that belt for a long time, want to make it a big deal. And, I think that it would be a terrible move to just stop that. It would be like hitting a brick wall, for The Miz.
Couldn't agree more. The Miz should win this. I think he will win this. I've been so impressed by The Miz, and we've talked him up so much on this show over and over again over the last year or so. And the interview or the talking smack segment with Daniel Bryan a few weeks ago just highlighted what this guy still has to offer. And instead of really, they've mentioned it consistently on SmackDown, but they never really followed up with it. And I think that there's a Pandora's box we opened up. I think there's a lot more for Miz to offer. This feud just seems like it's been going on forever. They've just been around each other and around that Intercontinental title match for like 2 years now.
It's like Bray Wyatt and all of his feuds.
Very much so.
They never quite end.
I just don't think there's really anything behind this. They're not even playing up the history. It's just there. They made a big mistake not turning Dolph heel after SummerSlam or during SummerSlam buildup, quite honestly. So, he's just a placeholder. Miz goes over.
Mm-hmm. And then the main event, WWE World Heavyweight Championship champion Dean Ambrose defending against AJ Styles. To take a phrase of sorts from AJ's last opponent, Dean's time is up, AJ's time is now. I love Dean Ambrose. I think that he is a great talent, great, great talent, who is a main event talent, but he hasn't been booked as a main event talent for the better part of a month and a half. And AJ has, with the exception of maybe a couple segments on this last SmackDown that I didn't care for, I think that AJ has looked like the star of not just SmackDown, but possibly even the whole roster, since debuting at the Rumble. Put that belt on him. Let Dean, maybe make Dean serious again. I'm sick of wacky, crazy, silly Dean. Let's see these two fight to be the top of this show. Seriously.
I would love to see this. The odds of this being a 1 month thing are probably pretty slim.
Oh yeah.
They should be going on for a little while. I'm just going to kind of go with my desire and my gut because I don't think they know how to book Dean Ambrose. And because they don't know how to book Dean Ambrose as a serious competitor and they put too much wacky Dean in there, I want them to move the belt off of him because they need a serious competitor at the top of the card. AJ has been probably the MVP of the company over this last year since he's come in at Royal Rumble. He's done so much in great in-ring work. He's worked his babyface. He's worked his heel. He's done good in both, or done well, I should say, in both of those iterations. And he's the right age. I think it is his time. And I think he'll carry that mantle of that SmackDown championship very well.
I agree with you. So that is Backlash. We'll be watching it live on the WWE Network this Sunday. We'll be tweeting along with everyone on Twitter, so you can join the conversation with us there. We do have a top five for you this week. We haven't done a top five in a number of weeks now that we have two shows that we got to cover on each episode, along with usually hyping up and getting ready for a pay-per-view or reviewing a pay-per-view. We haven't had much time to really get into top five. So we're making this top five again about the other brand. And I hate saying the other brand, but NXT. And we're doing top five NXT success stories. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean people who worked their way through NXT and got to WWE's main roster and have become stars on that. But it also means people who used NXT for what it was. It's, or what it is. It's a developmental territory. They came in, they worked on their personality, worked on their skills, and became a more well-rounded competitor, well-rounded character, for themselves.
Well, would you have, I've heard a lot of talk that NXT has been a failure because their only successes have been indie darlings, and I just disagree with that completely. There's a lot of examples, and you're going to talk about those, I believe, and I will talk about a few as well, that have come out of nowhere and really just come through the developmental and learned all their craft at the Performance Center. And then you also have the indie darlings that wouldn't necessarily just be big-time performers on the main roster if they hadn't gone through NXT first and endeared themselves to the crowd. So I think you should start off with this.
Okay, and before I do start, I am going to say that none of my people are quote-unquote indie darlings that I'm using. I'm using people who really did make the best of NXT and create a great, compelling character that pretty much got themselves over. And I'm going to start with a guy who people can love or hate, and that's Baron Corbin. Corbin came into WWE's developmental with really no wrestling experience. He played football, he boxed, and he is probably one of the most perfect examples of what that Performance Center can do for someone. They took a mold, a great look of a guy who's jacked, tall, covered in tattoos, and they turned him into a good worker, a good talker, someone who can hold his own in the ring and not feel like he is endangering anyone. Quite the opposite. There's been moments where he has actually saved people from hurting themselves, hurting him.
And also just been very collected in those moments. Instead of rushing through things, he seems to be, he seems to get it.
Mm-hmm. Now there's still, the jury is out for his main roster, stay, but he started off as this, Goldberg-like baby face that they kind of were like, here, he's undefeated, he's strong, that the fans rejected. They turned him heel, and then he went on to have some great matches with Apollo Crews, with Samoa Joe, with Austin Aries, and really showcase what he has to offer.
Baron Corbin is a success story in every way, shape, or form. Whether the WWE main roster writers understand what to do with him and push him as such, so far we've seen mixed reviews, but they gave them a great starting point. They took a guy with no experience, made him a pretty well-defined character, gave him some good help in the ring, and I thought Baron Corbin would eventually hold that NXT championship. I thought that was the next step for him. They brought him up to the main roster, and they have a lot to work with him. My number one guy, not really number one, but my first guy, is Tyler Breeze. Tyler Breeze was bouncing around a WWE developmental for a while. Yes, he had a ring experience. He had trained with Lance Storm, but he was just Mike Dalton was his name. He was just a guy. He didn't really have anything special to him. And eventually this Tyler Breeze character was developed. It was got the writers and NXT got behind this character. Tyler Breeze became that character.
He lived
that character. And you went from a guy who probably was on the verge of just being cut, go to being a competitor for the NXT world title and developing this character and being beloved by the crowd. And this is another guy that the NXT gave to the WWE as pretty much a polished, finished product. Excellent in-ring worker, athletic, great look, great gimmick. And the WWE promptly screwed that whole thing up without any, because they didn't have anything for him and didn't book him in any real feuds and really gave him nothing to work with. Mm-hmm. But that's not NXT's fault. Tyler Breeze is an absolute success from the NXT developmental system.
Yeah. One of the more recent success stories for NXT is the American Alpha, a team that's now getting to showcase themselves on WWE television with, SmackDown, yeah, they've been hit with a little bit of a speed bump with this injury storyline. Whether that's legit or just storyline remains to be seen. But American Alpha is comprised of two guys with stellar amateur backgrounds, including Chad Gable, who went to the Olympics, and were not really doing a whole lot. Jordan was a part of a jobber tag team with Ty Dillinger. Gable was a manager for a jobber tag team of Sawyer Fulton and Angelo Dawkins. And then as Jordan seeked a tag team, this was a reluctant tag team. Gable hassled him and kept on saying, hey, we should tag together. And they didn't want to tag. Well, Jordan didn't want to tag with him. And eventually W's started adding up and they're like, hey, we like this whole winning thing. And they became a well-oiled machine that, were friends and teammates and worked towards the common goal of being the best tag team that they could possibly be. Something that I wish that they could spotlight a little bit more on the main roster. But I mean, these guys went from nobody status to one of the most over tag teams in all of WWE right now.
And as you said, I mean, these guys weren't can't miss prospects in the way that they had body types and the athleticism, especially Jordan, not so much Gable because he's a little bit smaller, but they were not doing much and they got the people behind them. And right now you're talking about potential to be a tag team for 10 years. This could be one of those tag teams that is just a mainstay. And not one of the guys that gets broken up after 6 months and they have a feud and then one of the guys goes away. Jordan and Gable have a long-term potential, which is so important. I'm going to go over to the women's side. And quite honestly, you could probably say that the entire WWE women's division right now on the main roster is an NXT success, because without that, we'd still have a butterfly belt and we'd be calling them divas. But I'm going to get a little more specific and mention Charlotte. And Charlotte, you want to talk about pedigree? Check. You want to talk about the look? Check. You want to talk about the athleticism? Absolutely. But as raw as they come, she didn't look very confident on the microphone early on. Her ring work was not great. Her presence in the ring was not great. This was a person that was molded by the NXT writing staff and the bookers, was molded by the crowd, learned to be a heel, learned to be a effective heel, then transitioned into a pretty cool baby face, a badass baby face, and went to be someone that is capable of putting on amazing matches, now has a presence about her that is just incredible and looks better every single time we see her, both on the mic and in the ring. And without the NXT developmental, she would have been a flop on the main roster because she needed that time, and she needed that time in that way. And she's just done an amazing job.
Mm-hmm. I spoke about this guy when talking about the American Alpha, and he's a maybe slight difference than the rest of these people, and it's Ty Dillinger. Ty Dillinger probably had the most experience of any of the people on my list. He has been wrestling since 2002. He's actually been in the WWE before. He had a developmental contract in 2006 and wrestled on the revamp of ECW for about a year before he was released and then came back to WWE in 2013. Ty Dillinger, as we said, was just kind of a jobber. He was in a jobber tag team with Jordan and Gable. And then once they broke that up, he was directionless for a little bit until this Perfect 10 gimmick came around. And he owned it. He lived it. He cut his hair all weird and wonky, but he owned everything about this and has been able to become such an overact in NXT. Whether or not that can translate over to the main roster, we don't really know at this point. But, I mean, he's so over that one of their next big indie stars that they put out there, Dillinger was the one getting most of the reaction. The fans were mad that Dillinger lost to this guy because they loved him so much.
And that just shows a guy plugging away and working the gimmick. And we saw kind of the infancy of that gimmick at some house shows when he would come out and bring a ladder out and put up the scorecards, the matches. And this is another guy with great charisma. And yeah, that's just, to take a guy who was getting no reaction and turn him into that. That's a success story. Mm-hmm. If you ever see one. I'm going to go with the next guy. I'm going to go with the WWE Universal Champion, Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens has all the tools and indie cred and wrestling ability and mic skills. This guy did not need NXT to be great at what he did at all. But there is no way Kevin Owens would be pushed as he was on the main roster in the WWE without NXT to show them what he could do. His body type and his presentation are not what the WWE is typical of pushing and getting behind, but seeing what he had done in NXT, seeing the crowd reaction, seeing the polish on him in a real big match environments in places like Japan and the TakeOver specials, made them comfortable with letting him beat John Cena his first night in the company on the main roster while holding the NXT title. Without NXT to give him that stage, Kevin Owens might have been signed. Even if he would have been signed, he would not have been treated like such a big deal. So NXT definitely helped him out a lot.
Yeah. Next for me is The Revival. Dash Wilder and Scott Dawson, two guys that came into WWE developmental around a similar time, about a couple years apart, but they worked indie circuits, weren't really stars on either one of them. And while Dawson was in for a little bit longer and had some singles runs and some not so successful tag runs there, he formed a tag team with Scott Dawson that was just kind of there. They were kind of enhancement talent, but good talent at that. You could see that they worked really well in the ring together. We got a chance to see them at a house show for NXT a couple years back, and we definitely saw talent in the two guys, and they continued to work on their craft. They developed these characters of kind of throwback old-style bruisers in the vein of the Horsemen, especially Tully and Arn. And they've kept up with it. And while maybe they're not as over with the crowd as you might think, they might be the most well-oiled tag team. I've said well-oiled now twice. they might be one of the most technically sound tag teams in the entire game today. I would put them up against tag teams from Japan, from Ring of Honor, from Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. They're that good, in my opinion. And that's a big testament to what they have available to them down in NXT.
They are the best tag team in the entire company. That's for sure. They are their own. They work as a tag team. They double team as a tag team. They break the rules in the right way. Their body language is the right way. Everything about them is polished and incredibly well presented. You want to talk about somebody who knows a little bit about wrestling? Stone Cold Steve Austin. the praise he heaps on the revival is immense. And they're also on my list. I have to share that one with you because the revivals are easily one of the most important and one of the best examples that you can ever come up with of how the NXT development is making main roster ready players that can be plugged in. And if you look at the last match at the TakeOver Brooklyn, Gargano and Ciampa against the Revival, that crowd fed into everything going on, and it was because they disliked the Revival but respected their work, and that's all you have to say about that. Mm-hmm. So they're on my list too.
All right, and then my last one is Bayley. Yes, she worked in the indies from 2008 to 2012, and she worked for probably one of the bigger women's promotion, Shimmer, and also worked with Shine a little bit as well. But she came to NXT, this cute little baby face girl, and really turned herself into a force to be reckoned with, I think, when it comes to women's wrestling. She has built up a character, a brand that the sky's the limit for her. She has every bit of talent to be the most important women's wrestler in the world, in her future, just based off of the character she has now. And NXT gave her that opportunity to be there and allowed her to hone her craft, to develop her character, to develop her skills, her in-ring skills. I want to give a big shout out to Sarah Del Rey, the main trainer for the women down there, who's sometimes overlooked or not even known about. She's one of the best women's wrestler there's ever been and has helped a lot of those ladies. And I think that Bayley specifically has shown a lot of those fingerprints on her.
And the NXT crowd and developmental has allowed that character, that very throwbacky, very vanilla, I mean,
bubblegum
yeah. character that shouldn't work now, worked because they worked it and because they believed it and they got behind it. And on the main roster, they just don't have that time and that patience. At NXT, they do. And they grow something special, and Bayley's special.
It's almost like, I mean, sometimes we hate to be patronized by pro wrestling companies, but sometimes you have a character that is so much like a comic book character, like so unbelievable. Like I have a hard time believing that a 20-year-old girl like this would really dress like that. But you know what? We all eat it up. We all love it. We all think of like Bayley. I mean, the internet thinks of Bayley as their little sister, their kid sister, and they treat her as such, like that they only want the best for her, and they get mad at people who treat Bayley wrong. And it's so against what we sometimes want, but it's also so what we want at the same time in wrestling. And it's why we love wrestling.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I'm going to go with a big indie, not really indie, but a big guy for my last one, and kind of the opposite. You didn't pick anyone that had real cred going into it. I'm taking Shinsuke Nakamura. In the short time he has been in NXT, this world-traveled, renowned performer that wrestling fans all over the world love to see, got a chance to come over to the U.S., and shine on a stage that was big enough to get the eyeballs on him, but also not too big where they would have been terrified to take the chance. I do not think Shinsuke Nakamura debuts on the main roster, very similar to Kevin Owens, as he did in NXT. I think that he wouldn't get the reception. I don't even know if they would have gone with it. If NXT was not a thing, I don't think they would have signed Shinsuke Nakamura. I just don't think they would have. Mm-hmm. I think they would have been too afraid of the language barrier, even though he can deliver a promo, but he's not extremely fluent. I think they would have been scared of his size, of his body type, and his work style. But a place like NXT gives you that proving ground. And my God, is that person not a revelation and could be the one of the people that really makes a new era of the WWE? And it wouldn't have happened without NXT, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, when he went to the Performance Center, a lot of the talk was so he can learn the WWE style. Yes, but I also think that a lot of other people are going to start learning the strong style, his style. Maybe not strong style. I don't think people are going to be like beating the shit out of each other right in the rings, but his swagger, I hate to take that word, but, his charisma, the dedication to a character, living the character that he does, I think can rub off on generations to come if WWE truly wants to make him a flagship and build up the rest of their talent around that idea. I think we could be in for a good long run of good wrestling.
I agree.
Well, that's our top five NXT success stories. Let us know what you think about in the comments on our website, MissSpotsPodcast.com. You can also tweet them to us at MissSpots, where we'll also be live tweeting along to Backlash this Sunday. Also, every Monday and Tuesday for Raw and SmackDown. I try to also get on there for the CWC as well. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots. You can subscribe to this podcast in one of many wonderful fashions, and you should tell your friends, family, loved ones, enemies, bosses, coworkers, everyone, that they should listen to us and subscribe, whether that be on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or Google Play Music. You can also listen to us every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on Geek Life Radio. That is geekliferadio.com. For Kevin, my name is Mike, and we'll see you guys on Sunday during Backlash. Good night and good wrestling.